Welcome to episode 202 of the Men Who Save Football, the Dundalk FC Fancast. This is a pre-season preview for the coming season, but even before we talk about signings, we talk about your hopes and aspirations, we talk about the trip to Tala, the return to the Premier Division, Dundalk FC remains the most dramatic club in the country. We had just lifted the trophy at the end of last season, guys, and if you can cast your mind back immediately, the close-season drama began in the most spectacular way, where we had a kind of boardroom Game of Thrones-like battle for control. John Temple, who had come in the midst of the meltdown that was the end of the Ainscough regime, had seemingly rescued the club and then guided it through the promotion campaign, suddenly found that he was given an ultimatum to quit the club, that the other four American-based shareholders, or at least three of them, no longer had confidence in his leadership. And there seemed to be a kind of more or less demand to quit. And then there was a few weeks of drama whereby Temple dug in and said that, you know, they could go or they could buy him out. Eventually, in the midst of this, it was announced that Kieran Kilduff was departing for Waterford before the whole situation got resolved. Can you cast your mind back to that moment? And tell me what your thoughts were at that time.
Yeah, we had, I think, wrapped up last season with the Leinster Senior Cup, you know, sort of cast. And I think we finished that episode by saying, you know, the single most important thing for Dundalk now was a bit of stability to keep Kieran Kilduff and, you know, to have a good, you know, sort of recruitment campaign through the close season and this kind of thing. And as you say, right, immediately descended into just boardroom warfare. And as soon as the news, you know, started coming out that Kieran Kilduff was considering, you know, going to Waterford, there was rumours that that was a done deal and various other things. Like, I think stress levels, you know, at our HQ probably hit their peak throughout that period. So really quite an incredible, what we say, opposite reaction than everything that we had hoped for, right, in that cast. And at the same time, we got away with it. So, you know, clearly, I think, John Temple had done, I think a very good job in the circumstances that he found himself in. I think none of us foresaw that the club was going to be rescued in the way that it was. None of us foresaw that it was going to avoid Scarp, that we weren't going to take a points deduction, that we were going to, you know, have an immediate return to the Premier Division, you know, by topping the table. So all of that, I think, was way above expectations. And yet, I think at the same time, John, I think it's safe to say, had alienated a few people right along the way, a sort of polarizing figure in that respect. And unfortunately, I think the people that he alienated were his fellow directors. And so they seemed to pull the plug. Obviously, John wanted some recompense for his share of the club and the investment that he had put into it, which he got, or at least he got the amount that he was supposed to get, according to the last time legal papers were served about this topic. But I think Chris Clinton has come in since then and mended a few bridges, right? It's safe to say. And I think, you know, every time somebody takes over the club, there's always a honeymoon period, right? Where the worst, you know, excesses of the previous regime are suddenly sort of swept to one side and everything is rosy for a brief period. But, you know, there's been a reconciliation with the supporters' trust. The money for the pitch has been, you know, sort of put up, and I think the government grant received, or I think on the verge of being received for that. The floodlights are getting done. You know, there's talk of, you know, remedial work around Oriel Park and stuff like this. And the squad has been recruited and Kieran Kilduff retained, right? So I think overall we're enjoying that warm glow of everything being pretty satisfactory at the moment. And despite all of the, you know, bumps and stuff like that that have come along the road, we've survived just about, but it was nothing if not entertaining.
Yeah, it was a mad time, because if you think about it, like, I think everybody wanted stability, but it was a strange thing where, you know, John Temple had done a good job and he had done the right job in the right time and essentially saved the club, but probably you'd have to say it was probably best to change things in that scenario. And When he first took over from Ainscough, I mean, the Ainscough week was just crazy, you know, like that week where we almost went to the wall and nearly got evaporated on a Monday afternoon. You have to give him credit for stepping in. And as Martin said, avoiding Scarp, guiding us through that season, we got promoted, you know, ding, 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 everything good. And in one way, if you were looking up from the outside, you think, things are going well, let's continue on. But then you had these, you had this kind of internal struggle, and it's a kind of a it's a story you see sometimes in kind of, in business, which is there's a kind of a charismatic CEO founder type character who is very good at doing certain things and sweet talking people and doing the, the PR act. And eventually, the more level-headed money people on the board go, yeah, I think maybe we should take it from here. It's actually what happened to the US company WeWork. They were started by a bit of a madman, but he was a charismatic madman who, I'm not calling John Temple a madman. You might want to him, but WeWork were started by this very charismatic, visionary guy who got them so far, and then eventually the money people on the board said, I think we're gonna have someone else, take over from here. So it just really reminded me of that situation. If you believe what's true, John Demlin had done, well, John Demlin had done a very good job, but as Martin said, had kind of was burning bridges and was clashing with some people. And if we understand it correctly, Chris Clinton was the money behind the operation, and John Temple was not providing as much money as Chris Clinton. I think Chris Clinton then said, I will continue to provide money if I have more control, which is a classic conversation we had last year about fan support. We will supply money if we have some manner of a say. And from outside looking in, it looks as though John Temple had an outsized influence for the capital he was putting in, and the person putting in capital had diminished influence, and that kind of situation corrected itself through that whole scenario. And as Martin said, everything's rosy looking on the outside now in, but immediately, and so thank you to John Temple for what you did, but the moment Chris Clinton took over, things have been pretty positive. As you said, Kilduff came back, big win. We started re-signing some players. Well, we'll talk about the on-pitch stuff in a bit. Off the pitch, I mean, massive situations which were impending, massive dark clouds on the horizon. The floodlights on the pitch have been sorted or are about to be sorted. And they are a massive leap forward. I mean, you can't underestimate how those things are existential things to the club. Literally, you will not be allowed play without those things being fixed. And they're about to be fixed. I know, I think the floodlights were hampered by the storms recently, but they're weeks away from being done. The pitch has been replaced, got FIFA approved. These are big, big, big things that I'm not sure would have happened under John Temple's control, purely because mainly I think of capital investment. The fan investment has been brought in. The fan groups have been brought in from the cold. The manager was brought back in. Big key infrastructure things have been solved. There's been changing of things. A new kit provider. There's big things happening behind the scene about the promotion of the club. New, PR and marketing things are about to be released in the coming weeks, I believe. Oriel Park is getting cleaned up. So you'd have to say, on the off-field side of things, that since that dramatic few weeks of boardroom tussles, things look pretty good. It's always a little bit nervy to give a new owner, a 5-star rating this early in the season. We've been burned before, and in the last 6 years, we've been burned multiple times. New owners come in and go, yay, and then 12 months later, you have a problem with money running out. But so far, all is really, really positive. So you'd have to say since November, October, I would say things are looking pretty good.
One of the maddest things I think that happened was I've always been, an advocate for the supporters trust or any fan group and stuff like that before they, hand over money to a Dundalk FC owner who's, will talk about their historical reputations for, this kind of thing. It certainly leave you, questioning the wisdom of that. But I've always said that before money is handed over, there should be some demand for oversight of what's happening in the club. Now, I'm not necessarily saying like somebody who has, power over the board or something like that, but at least an insight into how money is being spent, how safe the club is, right, in the hands of the owners and this kind of thing. And so it was, I think, quite amazing to me to see money being handed over by the fan supporters without that demand. And then all of a sudden, the owner of the club turning around and just granting them a place on the board, out of goodwill and stuff like that. Like when we talk about things being rosy, like I don't think things have ever been that positive between owners and fans beforehand, that like these kinds of, goodwill gestures are just being made, one after another. Like we really are living through unprecedented times.
We should say that it has been the case in the last, what, probably 15 years, that the boardroom is something of a sealed chamber and our insights into it are very limited. So there are certain things that we do know. I mean, I think overall, John Temple can walk away and he can style himself as the savior of the club in its darkest hour. There seemingly was nobody else to step forward and shepherd us out of the rocks onto which Mr. Ainscough had allowed us to drift. And, to get, well, to avoid Scarp, to get promotion, all, and of course, he was involved in the appointment of Kieran Kilduff. I mean, all of those are, and to finish as champions, all of those are positives in his column. I suppose if we evaluate maybe where some of that confidence in him was lost, I mean, fan group acts of no confidence in the ownership became something of a frequent event. But of course, when you're outside of the boardroom, those are not all that significant. They can be just dismissed. But I suppose the biggest, most obvious, most indisputable negative in his column was he did seem to be very skeptical of fan involvement, up until the point where he effectively returned the money to the, was it the Trust or the 1903, when they actually tried to sponsor a player. Now that just struck me as a little bit petty, and it did not indicate that future fan involvement was likely to occur under that leadership. And I suppose he had the task of slimming down the expenditure, and that meant dismissing people from the club, which is never a popular thing to do either. But if you look at it sort of in both the pros and the cons, I mean, it did seem that, a reconciliation with fans, but in fairness to John Temple, he did mention the necessity of working on the pitch and the lights prior to his departure and claimed to be working towards the work that we're now seeing to come to fruition. So I suppose, to be fair, if we believe what he says, he wasn't sitting on his hands doing nothing on those issues. So he had a hand in that getting done. So we can give him some credit for that as well. But I suppose the period of instability, we just needed it to end one way or the other. Either he needed to consolidate his control and bring the club forward, or the other shareholders needed to consolidate their control. But you could not have a civil war in the boardroom and unsettle the manager at that crucial point in the season. So as that drama played out, I think when we got towards the end of the month, newspaper headlines were declaring that Kieran Kilduff had quit Dundalk. That was a fact, according to the press. And then he was on his way to Waterford. That was the rumour that came on top of the fact. By the time we got to the 10th of November, it had all been resolved. John Temple had stepped away on whatever terms he had agreed. Kieran Kilduff hadn't left the club, contrary to the press reports. And there was little subplots of this drama still echoed on. We were being sued by our kit supplier for unpaid bills, the usual sort of Dundalk FC financial dramas. But Kieran Kilduff, once secured, began to set about building a squad. And this is maybe where we can pivot into what we've got to look forward to next season. Kilduff has recruited, and I think he's recruited pretty spectacularly. Now, just looking at the players that he's brought in, we were fairly successful in the first division. We won most of our games. We were probably by far the best squad, and the table did kind of reflect that. We had a few jitters here and there, but generally speaking, we led the division from beginning to end. But you probably saw that there was a few potential weaknesses that, may not survive the Premier Division. We were relying heavily on relatively young, inexperienced players, and there was also a few areas in the team which occasionally were prone to self-destruction. Not to single out our goalkeepers too much, but we can see that we cycle through Peter Cherry and Endemol Nogue regularly when either was making mistakes. And that's not that wasn't unique to them. We had some other players in positions who dipped in and out of form. Now, if we look at the recruitment that's been made, several things have been addressed. We've brought in experience. Kieran Kilduff has made three signings in their 30s, which is Keith Buckley from Bowes, Rob Cornwall from Bowes, and Danny Mullen. And also significantly, They're all guys who play in the centre. So effectively, his recruitment has all been towards the spine of the team. We now have a new goalkeeper, new centre half, new defensive midfielder, new attacking midfielder also, and a new centre forward. So can I just throw it out to you generally? What do you think of the recruitment? Do you think he focused on the spine of the team deliberately? And do you expect those players to be part of our starting 11?
Well, I suppose the interesting thing about the signings is they. I mean, for me, I don't know so much about the spine of the team thing. That's pretty interesting, but it's more the experience, I think, especially with Buckley and Cornwall. I suspect they're being brought in to bring to you know to essentially to fuse a young first division team with some kind of Premier Division experience. And to try and get that in there, it is quite interesting that they're all, you know, down the centre. But I think it's not just we could talk about Mullen in a second, but I think Buckley and Cornwall are interesting because, as I said, both in their 30s, which I suspect also is again related to the financial situation at the club, which is we've had to be clever in our buys. One thing, you know, not to go back into the discussion about the off field and this stuff is that coming up. Everything is rosy around the club, but I do think fans need to be pretty realistic that we're not operating on a mega budget. So these buys, I think, are really, really clever. These signings are really, really clever because I think they are an attempt to work with the budget we have, but also you know, bring in experience. And you know, will Buckley start? I don't know. I'd say I would expect Rob Cornwall to start. I think, you know, that would be one you'd expect to start and just really try and give some experienced, because really it's the big leap from First Division to Premier Division. It was great to see so many each week re-signings. And I think we've a lot of, you know, we're quite bonded with these players now, having come up through, you know, a tumultuous season, winning the championship. There's a lot of love there for those players, but they are now going into the Lions' Den. And the first division is a total kind of fantasy world when you're thinking about, you know, quality. Is then like we almost have to say, amazing. We were definitely the best team in the country, best squad in the country in that division. Everything is reset now, you know, as to expectations. So to put in something like, you know, central defender and defensive midfielders, I think is an attempt to work within a budget and to put in some grit. And you know, both really, you know, players over the years have done great things and achieve great things, and just I think are really, really solid players. And an attempt, I think, to balance resources with getting in experience. And I think we'll talk about Mullen in a second, it's slightly different, but I think those two players, the two Bows kind of stalwarts, really interesting. And you can kind of see the vision of what he's trying to do.
Yeah, like I think, being perfectly honest, that recruitment might have been compromised by the amount of investment that had to go into both the pitch and the floodlights. I think, as Rory said earlier, right, those were existential, things for the club, that if we didn't sort those, we were not going to be able to play football. And so I think it was right that the priority was on those things. But I actually don't know if the club is going to be training full time or part time. My expectation is part time, mainly off a comment that Kieran Kilduff led with, at the end of last season, where he said people like J.R. Wilson could only play for the club if it was part-time, because he had I want to say, a real job at there, a full-time job. And so part-time football was his only opportunity. And given that we re-signed him, I assume that the club is training part-time, right, on that basis. Very flimsy sort of rationale there, but I think that's my assumption for the moment. And so I think probably some of the signings reflect that. I think if there were people out there looking for full-time football, who wanted to make that like the only thing that they're doing, I think Dundalk was probably not the right club for them. And I think the people who have signed are people who are prepared to, sort of be part-timers, at least for the moment. And so I think that doubtless had an effect on the recruitment strategy. At the same time, I think it's sensible. You talked about the youth of the team in the first division. And even of some of the people that we signed, I think Ronan Tehan, Harvey Warren as well, who I think, Ken, you were very impressed with in pre-season, right? Looks very promising. But at the same time, they needed to be augmented with a little bit of experience. And I think we have people in the dressing room like Con O'Keefe and that kind of thing, who have a maturity about them, a leadership quality and that kind of thing. But especially towards the end of last season, when we lost Sean McHale and a couple of people from the centre defence, like we looked bare bones there for a while. And O'Keefe was filling in, across the entire back four in various, positions across a sort of window of about like 6 or 7 weeks. And he had himself only just come back from, a fairly serious, sort of injury. And so I think that exposed that there was, a lack of depth in that area. So I think very reassuring to see that we'd signed, Warren, we'd signed Cornwall, Bobby Burns, and stuff like that. I think there's a real reinforcement right across that back four. And then Connor Cairns in goal as well, who, not to disparage our previous goalkeepers too much, but, I think that's a real upgrade there. So, clearly he wasn't quite in favour with Joey O'Brien at Shelburne at the moment. But I think, what we'd seen of him over the past, 3, 4 years, really quality goalkeeper. And so I think a bit of a coup to get him. I don't know if there was really a strategy to, do it down the spine of the team. I think we already had experience, maybe in some places like Daryl Horgan and stuff like that, out in the wings where, maybe you didn't need to be adding more experience into those areas, right? You already sort of got that already. But I think it leaves the squad looking like it has more depth, more quality, more experience in various places, and at the same time still has that blend of youth. I think re-signing Owen Kenny looks like we're going to cling on to Vinnie Leonard, for a while yet. We've got Harry Groom and stuff like that in there. I think that's a good blend. Honestly, if you ask me, was I happy with this recruitment, I would say absolutely. I think this is probably the maximum bang for our buck. Will that be enough to stay in the Premier Division and prosper? I don't know. So we'll have to wait and see on that one. But yeah, I think looks pretty satisfactory on paper.
Yeah, without wishing to get carried away, I think it's as perfect a transfer window as you could have done with the resources. We have lamented, I think when we've looked back at transfer windows in the past, it's usually lamenting how the club got it wrong, particularly in eras which we need not go back to when we were giving away some of our best players for nothing. But all of these players are reported to have come in as free transfers, okay? And I think they address the most evident weaknesses that we had in the squad, which would have made us vulnerable. Like, as I saw these signings come in, I agree, Conor Cairns, very experienced Premier Division keeper who has, seems very solid and stable, a little bit of a younger age profile than Peter Cherry, who again lined out for us in the Leinster Senior Cup this year and looked pretty sharp. But I don't think, from what we saw in the First Division, that you would want to lean too heavily on Peter Cherry or Enda Minogue, and hope to survive, because the keeping position is absolutely fundamental. If the player in that position isn't on their game, then confidence becomes brittle throughout the defence and throughout the entire team. And we've seen how a keeper who's low on confidence, or maybe not quite up to Premier Division standard, they are the most fundamental weakness there, to use our oft-used Star Wars metaphors. They're the port in the Death Star that the enemy can get at. So I think Conor Cairns is a really, really good signing. He's in on loan. He can't play against Shelburne, so let's hope we don't get them in the cup or whatever. Yeah, I think he was a really good signing. We signed two centre halves. Now, I mentioned Rob Cornwall, very experienced, but not ancient at 31. So again, bringing that experience in, because we have such a young centre half. Squad generally, I think he's a really astute signing. I think we said towards the end of the season we need an experienced man in the middle, and I think he could be it. And it gives you options then, because we've actually brought in two centre halves now. Harvey Warren, who we've seen very little of, but we did see him play in Merhevenamore in the Leinster Senior Cup. There's something about him. I know it's very, very early days, but I think his physical attributes and his comfort on the ball, I think we've got a real prospect there. And I would watch him, because we may lose Vincent Leonard. That's still up in the air. I think deadline is tonight. Rumours are that Norwich are pushing for a substantial fee to sign him. Whether or not he'd be loaned back to us for the season or part of the season would remain to be seen. But I think Vincent Leonard is going to go at some point anyway. He is that good. His career is going to take him overseas. And I'm quite reassured to see another young centre half, although, older than Vincent Leonard by 4 years, coming into the squad as well. I think with Cornwall, Warren, and Mayowa, even if Leonard goes, we've got decent coverage there, and O'Keefe can come in an emergency. all of those seem to me to be viable partnerships at centre back. We've also signed Bobby Burns, who's highly rated, not exactly a young player, 26, quite experienced. He's going to fill in at that left back position. And then at the right back position, you can have J.R. Wilson or you can have O'Keefe, possibly Dervin in a pinch as well. So that defence looks pretty solid. And then another vital position, which we've bemoaned ever since Chris Shields has departed, was the defensive midfielder. How often have we had the conversation about nobody quite fitting into that role? No disrespect to the guys who have been there. But Keith Buckley at 33 comes in with a lot of experience, very much specialised in that role. If he sits in front of that defence, I think we potentially could be hard to beat. Then immediately in front of him, another player who caught the eye in Mirhevna Moore, Ronan Tihan. He's player of the year at Kerry, young again, only 21 years of age, but seems to be a real dynamic attacking force in the mold of an old-fashioned winger, even though he plays more centrally. And on top of that, you've got Danny Mullen, who may lead the line for us. But again, we've got Arubi and we've got Owen Kenny. So we've got players who've kind of done it in the first division. I do think we needed a goal scorer with Premier Division experience. So all in all, I have to say, I'm really, really impressed with the window. It looks great when you put it on paper. And we're going to find out very quickly whether or not Kieran Kilduff has got it right.
Yeah, one thing that's a little bit surprising, like we haven't seen any of those, mystery loan signings from abroad and stuff like that. That might have been, a real characterization of the O'Donnell era, right? Where, transfer deadline day, you suddenly have, two, three lads showing up from Wales, Scotland, other places being thrown in there. And I think the first season under O'Donnell, there was really a surprising success story. People like Stephen Bradley and some of that came in and, did a great job, to hit the ground running and some of that very satisfactory. And yet probably season two under O'Donnell, like that kind of thing evaporated entirely. So I think the choice has been made to not, roll the dice and go with that kind of, we say, wild card sort of approach, which is a little bit interesting. But at the same time, I almost expected one or two of those, just to add a sort of random element in there as well. But I don't know, it doesn't seem to be like it's going to be a feature, at least not the way that Kieran Kilduff is talking about his squad being pretty much complete at this point.
Yeah, I think we've all been burnt by the international transfer lucky dip that was characteristic of the Stephen O'Donnell era. Now, in fairness, what you say is true. In the first season, that worked out extremely well. We got very effective players in multiple positions that were a significant unit of the team. Very, very kind of effective, helped us have a very good season. Thereafter, though, we saw Stephen O'Donnell persist with some players who were clearly not performing. They're gone now, and I don't say this to be mean, but the goal haul of Cammy Elliott and Jamie Gullen, it just when you go to those lower leagues and you hope that they'll translate to League of Ireland and thrive, I think it was pretty evident that those players struggled throughout their time here. They've returned to the level that they came from, and they are frequent scorers at that level. So it just goes to show you there are levels, and the fourth tier of the Lowlands League or whatever is not equivalent to League of Ireland. Sometimes these things go, sometimes they don't go. I'm way more comfortable with this internal recruitment. With Rob Cornwall and Keith Buckley, we know what we're getting with Danny Mullen. We hopefully know what we're getting. Experienced players who've done it in the league, they won't need to acclimatize. They won't find that their style of play is not really suitable to the way the game is played here. So I think it not only is it kind of a clever recruitment window, it's also, I think it's just more sensible. There's less risk involved. If you are looking for a little bit of randomness, and again, we're not singling anybody out here. Probably the most surprising element, like we did let go a lot of players from, a lot of players who are kind of big fish in the first division. We might think of Dean Ebb, for example, who's gone up north. Seemed to go a little bit off the boil here after a good opening period to the season. But one player who has been retained is Norman Garbutt. Now, Norman, many people might have been expecting him to be let go as well as kind of the type of player who, had a few cameos in the first division, looked promising, skillful, but never really chipped in with assists and goals in the way that he might. But he's been retained. So, I mean, obviously his period at the club now has extended for 2 seasons. He's going into his third season. Seems to have been hampered by injury a lot, but yet Kieran Kilduff has seen something in him to retain him for the Premier Division campaign. Did that one strike you as a little bit of a surprise? Do you think he's one of those players that if he can get over his injuries, that we'll see a very different Norman Garbutt this season?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of these things that, as a supporting, you can never really see, behind the scenes. You can't see what's going on the training ground. You can't see what's going on in the dressing room, this kind of thing. And I think Garbutt is one of those players. If you look at his contributions on the pitch, it's very hard to see why you would be retaining him for, 3 seasons at this point. Not that he hasn't looked like he's had, a total lack of quality when he's come into the team. But he's just been so infrequently in the team that it's hard to form any opinion. I've enjoyed watching his style a little bit, from the sidelines when he has played, because I think, I don't want to describe him as a clumsy player and this kind of thing, but like I think he has a tendency to really, sort of give the opposition a chance to win the ball, but then he's got like a reasonable amount of pace himself that he might get there too. And I think he creates this whole edge of uncertainty, right? Both for opposition players, his own teammates, people in the stand and stuff like that. Just, we talked about, rolling the dice and this kind of thing. I think as a winger, a player that just tends to like roll the dice and see what happens. And a lot of the time it brings a sort of a slightly chaotic element to things. But I think a characteristic of the League of Ireland lately has been that it's very chance poor, right, in an attacking sense. That you watch some other leagues and there's, 10, 15, good chances a game, shots on goal, and this kind of thing. You look at the League of Ireland, it's almost more Serie A like, where, there's sort of two, three chances a game and this kind of thing, and maybe, somebody scores one or two of those. And so I think sometimes when you've got a style where defensively, like people can really go into that low block, try to inhibit the opposition, altogether, be very compact, very, hard to beat, this kind of thing. Having a player like Norman, who is just, a slightly chaotic element in there, is certainly a way to mix things up. If it's hard to break down one of those stubborn League of Ireland defenses, like he is definitely somebody who will mix things up, if he comes into the game. And so from that perspective, I think, it's interesting, but I think he's played so few minutes for us, it's very hard to have like a strong opinion of whether he's a key squad member or not.
Yeah, have you ever known of a player just coming to mind who maybe has been in the squad for a year or two, was maybe a little bit peripheral, and then did blossom into a kind of really significant player?
The only comparison I can think of is John Mountney, right? To compare him to one of the legends of the club. But John was at the club for maybe 4 or 5 years and was, a peripheral figure, I think, for a bit of that, where he was, a utility player who would come in and, fill in gaps when, Darren Meenan was injured or Sean Gannon maybe, or various other people, sort of, but wasn't one of the first names on the team sheet, right? Wasn't in the starting 11. And then around about, 2015, 2016, suddenly under Stephen Kenny, like blossomed into this stalwart. And I think Kenny had tried a whole variety of people in Mountney's position. People like Darren Meenan and Dylan Connolly. I think Kenny always seemed to believe that there was somebody who had a bit more than John Mountney, right, to fill in that position. And yet every time he signed somebody in that position, they seemed to drift away, to one side, and Mountney seemed to be the one who came to the fore, right, to fill that in. And so I think, if we're looking for comparisons, probably a similar age profile, right, to Norman Garbutt as well, right? John Mountney was somebody who came to us like very young as an apprentice. And so I think, Norman could be one of those players that just is, filling in gaps in a utility player for a while, but maybe, there's time left with his age profile that he may yet blossom.
Yeah, you remind me, similar era, Chris Shields, who now has a kind of godlike status in the club for his initial couple of seasons. We were not performing very well. And Chris was, he gave no indication of being the future player that he was. So, there's been kind of figures before who have surprised us all. And obviously, Kieran Kilduff has seen something there. He thinks this guy can do more than we've seen so far. And we'd be wishing him all the best that he can, reach his full potential with us this season, because we probably will need the full squad to be making their contribution. Just before we leave the squad, we're sponsoring a player this year. Rory, you picked the man. Tell us who we're sponsoring and why you picked him.
We are sponsoring Bemi Arubi, who, the reason I think he really endeared himself to everyone last year. I mean, he stepped up when we needed a goal scorer. If you remember, at one stage, it was a pretty kind of, it was a bit of a drought at the time. And he scored a few goals early on when things were, we just could not get anything attacking going. And he became such a central part of that, the championship challenge, and was popping up with goals. And I just think he came in at a time when we seemed bereft of options. Young, bit of a gamble, and I think he really, really, he provided something when we needed it. You forget about back in that time early on in the season. I think he got a goal at one stage, I can't remember against who, and it was just really seemed to break a deadlock, both in the game, but also I think for the club. And since then, I just think he's just been so exciting. Now, what's going to be interesting about players like Arubi and Owen Kenny is the step up. You know, this is the big question, big moment. So I think the reason we sponsored him and the reason I'm so fond of him is because of how exciting he was last year. And let's see what happens, you know. When all those re-signings were coming in as well, you know, I think as fans, we were all waiting to see some new names and some experienced names. And so I think when you see a Cornwall, but even as you've mentioned before, like Kearns and Bobby Burns and things like that, it's not just about these storied veterans. But I think someone like Conor Kearns is a really interesting signing. So they were augmented. I think fans were looking to see a bit of Premier Division experience. But the flip side to all this is going to be then players like Arubi, how do they respond in the Premier Division? And I think it's exciting. You know what I mean? I think you shouldn't be, you know, overly negative to say, well, we're going to struggle. It's going to be a battle. We're going to grind our way through it. The flip side to that is you shouldn't go like, you know, this glow around the club shouldn't be into a kind of a, yeah, we're going to charge and we're going to be winning games. It's going to be a struggle. But I think it's exciting to see how a player like Arubi, I want to see how he will do. And for people to see what he is capable of, because let's face it, we were obviously locked in and focused on the First Division last year. But when you're not in the First Division, you tend to just look down and see, you know, positions of teams. I don't think you dig too much into who's playing what and where and who. So to see some of these players that we've been really excited about last year on the main stage. Now, will they be starting, I think, is a big question. We'll probably talk about the Rovers game in a bit now. I mean, would you go to Tala and right into the Lion's Den and start Bemi? I don't know. I mean, I'm here to hype him up and say that it was my suggestion to sponsor him. I really want to see him do well. But then immediately I'm thinking tactically, and if I'm Kilduff and you're going out to Tala to play Shamrock Rovers, and then you have Danny Mullen, who, you know, maybe you'd just go a little bit conservative and hold Arubi on the bench to later on. Really, really loved what he contributed last year. Love his attitude, love his spirit, and excited to see what will come of him. Would he start on Friday? I don't know.
You read my mind. It is time to turn to the fixture table. We start off, as you say, in the Lion's Den. We're going to Shamrock Rovers away. Going to be a great occasion. Hopefully not a ungreat experience. Okay, so you're going into the now long-running champions, fairly dominant. They'll be looking to get off with a win. They're playing a team who's just come up. Several new signings. We have yet to blend. We then have to go to Derry. So we're kind of facing the strongest teams over the last few years, both away in our first two games. I think it wouldn't be panic stations if we fail to take points in either of those two. But our third game is going to be kind of pivotal. The return to Oriel is set to be the Loud Derby, Drogheda United, a team which we have just defeated in the Malone Cup, which gave us a great kind of platform to go on and have a good opening series of the season. Realistically, how many points do you see coming from those first three games, and what are you expecting on Friday?
Well, looking a bit beyond the first three games, I think if you're going to survive in this league, you probably want to be targeting about 40 points. And so I think that means 10 points on average from each of the sort of nine game sequences. And we couldn't be starting with a more difficult task, right? I guess both Shamrock Rovers and Derry away. Although I sometimes think that getting Shamrock Rovers early in the season before they've built up a head of steam is maybe the best time to play them. But yeah, I think it's going to be tough if you clock up three, four defeats, right, in the first few games and stuff like that. That 10-point target is going to start looking like a long way off. But if we were to, I'd say, win one and draw one of the first three games or something like that, like start with 4 points from those three, I think it looks more attainable. And so I think that's probably got to be the target. Now, I think on paper you'd be looking at Drogheda as maybe the most likely team for us to beat, but I don't think that means we should be thrown in the towel with any of the others either. And so, we have got quality in the squad. I think Rovers sometimes start slowly. Could we go there and pick up a win? I mean, the O'Donnell team that got relegated, went there and got a 1-1 draw to, make us all feel terribly optimistic about the first game of the season 2 years ago. And I think, it felt deserved at that point. I think Ryan O'Kane had hit the post in that as well. We were probably a little bit disappointed not to be 2-0 up at one stage. Like, if we can go there and, smash and grab a bit, I think that would be a great start to the season. And I don't see why not. Personally, I would probably go with a Ruby up front. I think that when he came into the club last season, we sort of expected him to play out wide, right, on the right, that he had sort of played there most of the time when he was at Shells or Waterford. And so it was a bit of a surprise to see him, become that number nine player that was really, wrestling with centre halves and that kind of thing. But some of his best goals last season were, from that kind of position, right, in wrestling with centre halves. His goal against Cove, right, at Oriel Park was sensational. And so I think he would be a real handful. If anything, I think Danny Mullen is one of those, a forward without being a number nine, kind of players that is a bit more, playing off somebody else. And so I think there's, some scope to say that maybe both of them will play, and they could form a partnership. But we gotta wait and see. But yeah, I think 4 points from three games, I think that would be my target. But it's a tough ask.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting that let's not put it down as an omen for the future, but I do think back to that opening game 2 seasons ago when we went there and got that draw. Let's not say it means anything for the rest of that season, but it is interesting. Shamrock Rovers do sometimes take a while to get going. When I into the Lions Den, I just think, first of all, amazing occasion. I mean, I buying my ticket was just pure ecstasy. Buying a ticket for a Premier Division game. Just I suddenly felt we're back, you know what I mean? No disrespect to the First Division, but it felt good, and it'll feel really good going out there. And I think being back with the fans and stuff like that would be great. I suppose it's my instinct then to suddenly go a bit conservative. I mean, technically, in my heart, I would say absolutely start a Ruby, and I want people to see what he's capable of. But I start immediately starting going into the fetal position and saying, and it hasn't worked out for Dundalk before out at Tala as well. When you go overly defensive, and then sometimes they can absolutely smash you. I think that is always the risk, though. How do you approach a game like that? Do you, if you, I think if you go to Shamrock Rovers overly defensive, we've seen before that they can punish you. If they, break your back line, they can get in behind you, and then it could be really bad. If you go overly gung-ho swashbuckling, they can also punish you. So it'd be an interesting one for Kilduff to manage. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. If you lost those two opening games, it really shouldn't be panic stations. We all need to be realistic about what's going on here. The points that will be picked up against other sides, it is absolutely what a 1-2, whammy of opening fixtures. So if you lost both of them, it would not be panic stations. If you lost three in a row, the problem I think it would be psychological then. Is it then the story starts to get set both inside and outside the club that straight up, straight back down type scenario? Because I think that's going to be on everyone's mind as well, which is everyone both inside and outside the club are going to be looking at, well, how are Dundalk going to do? Especially because, the size of and the name of a club like Dundalk. having gone through multiple ownerships and things like this, there's going to be a big amount of pressure to see how they perform. Drogheda at home, you'd really, really, really look to be, wanting to win that for multiple reasons. The first two games, yeah, no, I wouldn't be too grim. But they are going to be real, real, real tests. But a lot of this stuff, I would say, is the start of each season is no one really knows. No one even really knows how the opposition are going to be. As Martin said, I think Rovers sometimes do take a while to get a head of steam up. Possibly, I think, definitely one of the best times to get them. We'll see. I mean, a point, I think, away. You're just promoted. You're playing the champions. You got a point, something like that. Would be a real, I think, that'd be a real, real great start to things. Obviously, you take a win all day, every day. See how you go on from there. So, listen, it's just going to be amazing to be there. Really, really tough first opening three games. But I think we'll get some points out of it.
Like you've both said, I think it's a good time to get them. If there ever is a good time to play Shamrock Rovers. If you look at their performance in the President's Cup, which they lost, Rovers, Stephen Bradley, still have a tendency to favour three at the back. And that kind of raises the question, how do you want to counter that? Do you want to go two up front and keep those guys occupied and pinned back and make it uncomfortable for them to build up play from the back, which we know that they tend to favour? Or do you want to just kind of give them their own final third, let them have possession there, fall back to the halfway line and engage them a little bit, closer to your own goal? That's a dilemma that will affect the lineup and the formation. However, if we look at the Rovers squad, like, Roberto Lopez still features quite prominently as a key man for them. Daniel Cleary as well, who we know quite a lot. Neither of them are quick. So, not slouches by any means, but possibly not as fast as a Ruby. Maybe able to match Mullen for pace. I'm not so sure. We haven't seen a lot of Mullen in a Dundalk shirt. So that's, I suppose, one decision for Kiel Kilduff. Me personally, I'd be a little bit cautious. I would take a draw in this game, so I would probably favour having one up front and then maybe falling back a little bit. One of the kind of surprise packages for Shamrock Rovers since we've been out of the top flight is that Conor Malley has come into the squad and seemingly is a regular for them. Now, we had Conor Malley. Struck me as a very skillful, but kind of, dare I say, inconsistent player. But nonetheless, he's a player who's come into their squad and been ever-present. And we've got other figures like Jake Mulroney, who's come in from Pats, who, is a fairly, he's a fairly good player. He's got a lot of speed on the wing. He could cause you trouble. But again, we kind of have this recollection of when Dundalk were really good and Rovers were really good and we were pushing each other for first and second. And the quality, I think, of both squads was way higher then than it is now. Is there kind of a legacy of that era that we think these guys are, a fearsome team that are all conquering and unbeatable, when actually they're mortal and they do seem to have some vulnerabilities in their team?
Well, I would say that their perennial defending champions for most of the last few years is really what sticks in my mind. Are they as swaggering and as dominant as they were? Maybe not, but it's all relative to me. The fact is that other than that Shell season, I mean, they're the only game in town. And, I think some of this is to do with other clubs not, rising to the occasion when they should have. Other clubs with lots of investment not rising to the occasion. And then you have, if you look at the last few seasons, things like Pats and Derry both looked to be, poised to do something. And then they just kind of shoot themselves in the foot. So I would say, yeah, again, we're now risking the ire of online hordes of fans. You know what I mean? But I think there's something to be said, because I think if you look at the last few years, Shamrock Rovers win the league absolutely on merit. But it's also the merit of clubs who you look to see. I mean, we saw for a period Stephen Kenny's Pats looking to be like, oh, shit, they're gonna lead a charge here, falling off. Derry with perennially, I think, are underachieving. So it is partially the fact that Rovers are the best in the division, but it is also that other clubs are not stepping up to, I think, to really challenge them. So in that light, it probably does give a twisted perspective on how good they are. Now this is now opening ourselves up to, online criticism, whatever. I don't really care. But I think you're making a good point here, which is I think we've probably built them up to be more of a force than they are. But that is also because no one has really taken the throne from them, other than that, the Shells season. For the last few years, it's just been them. But it's not just because they scorched earth the league. It is because no one has really put it up to them. So yeah, maybe we're being overly cautious in our approach there, and in our thinking about them.
I think on Friday, probably the performance is more important than the result. We want to see that the players that we've brought in are sort of, integrating into the squad, that relationships are forming between whoever the centre halves are and the goalkeeper, the defence is all talking to one another. That probably Keith Buckley is patrolling that danger zone in front. Where Rovers, they still have players who like to crop up in that area. Malley is a player who kind of plays in that kind of Cantona-like, area just outside the D of the box. Jack Byrne is still in the squad, and that's where he loves to thrive as well. So it's going to be really interesting to look at Buckley, if presumably he'll be selected, and how he counters some of that attacking midfield threat from Rovers. There is going to be, battles all over the pitch. How either Mullin or Ruby or Kenny tests their back three is going to be fascinating as well. How we do from set pieces, we know that Rovers, they have plenty of height. With Jack Byrne, they've got the ability to deliver the ball very, very potently into the box. They'll be a threat at centre at set pieces. It'll be interesting to see what some of the height that we have, whether or not we can match that. It's going to be a great occasion. We're back in the big time, regardless of the result. And yeah, just looking forward to it at this stage.
Yeah, I thought there was some really interesting comments as well from Kieran Kilduff about his squad, where he said pretty much everybody had got a chip on their shoulder about performing in the Premier Division, right? And his plan was to use that, as the big motivation for people to, they had to go and prove a point. And I think that's a very good psychological sort of test for a lot of these players, that some of them were relegated, 2 years ago with Dundalk. Other ones have, sort of been let go by their current club or been willing to part company at the very least. And, I think there's that test for them all to say, like, are they really Premier Division quality? And somebody I, thought about this as well that we haven't mentioned is A. Dervin, right? A, I think, was player of the season last year, like a real talismanic figure in the middle. We saw him play a season in the, well, half a season in the Premier League for Dundalk. And I think what concerned me about him then was that, he just didn't seem to have the pace of players like, say, a Chris Forrester or something like that. That if there was a 50-50 between the two of them, Forrester or, other players like him would get to the ball a yard before Dervin. And so I think a real test, I think, for Dervin, for Buckley, right, whoever plays there, to be able to match their game to what the opposition have, right? And you've listed through the Rovers contingent there, right? Whether it's Jack Byrne or Conor Malley or Dylan Watts, who I think is maybe one of their less talked about but probably best midfielders. I think they're all players who like to, sort of find themselves on the edge of the area and sort of combined with their off the ball running, pick out people with, knee passes and stuff like that, they can be very dangerous. But I think a real challenge to see can people like Buckley and Dervin, shut that down and not through magically finding another, 2 yards of pace that they don't physically have, but through, football intelligence and stuff like that, making, that extra, half a yard for themselves by just seeing things sooner and being on top of it. So, I think that's going to be one of the big challenges. I think even a challenge for Kilduff himself, right? Every league he has taken part in so far, he has won. Is this going to be the first year where he actually finds himself not winning the league? I really hope that's not a problem. I suspect. Like he's going up a level, I think, in terms of a lot of other coaches who are talented themselves, right, and are, tactically intelligent and stuff like that. I think this is going to be a real, interesting test year for him too.
Yeah, Dervin, of course, really popular player. A lot of people love his energy from last year. He has had the experience of going up into Premier Division, probably more so than any other player, and finding himself in teams that are struggling. He may as well, like a Ruby at centre forward, who now faces more competition for his position. He faces more competition for that defensive midfield position that was his own. But one of the things that might stand to Dervin is his versatility. I mean, this is a player who can play also wide on the right or at right back. Maybe there's even scope for a partnership alongside Buckley. Who knows, depending on how attacking we want to be or defensive we want to be in our posture. So, look, all those questions are probably going to be answered on Friday when we head to Tala. So, with all that said, and no football really to analyze, I suppose we might as well wrap it up there for episode 202. It's been a really interesting close season. It began in a crisis. It's ending with optimism, and we're all looking forward to the big day where we return to the Premier Division against our, let's say, our fiercest rivals on Friday. And we'll be back to talk to you on episode 203 after the Shamrock Rovers game.